All right, so this will be Julie part two, I guess. Let's see. Okay. One of the things that came up, what was your grandmother's name, Julie?
Julia.
Oh, she was Julia. Okay, but you guys called her Nana, right?
Right.
So she lived to 103, is what I heard?
Just short of, she died in February. She would have been 103 in March.
Did she live with your parents that whole time?
Until the last year, she fell and broke her hip, and so she went into an assisted living.
But, I mean, still, to be living with, wow, okay. So was she with it and mobile for most of her life?
Totally.
Wow. She was totally with it, and when she broke her hip at 102, you know, they kind of, the people at the rehab center were kind of, now you've got to understand, she may never walk again. Hell, she was up in, what, a week?
Yeah.
Going around in her walker, and she did great. She just popped right back, and she was mentally fine.
Cool. Yeah,
the interesting thing, Scott, is that when she broke her hip at 102, it was the first time in her life that she was ever hospitalized.
What?
Yep, first and only time she'd ever been in a hospital.
Dude, that's crazy. So this is what came up, and this is what I wanted to ask you, was my wife said that she heard that the rumor was that the secret to her longevity was that, and maybe you can corroborate this, was that she used to have, she used to have an egg yolk every day and then save the egg white. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, totally.
Is that right? So Angie said something about that she would have an egg yolk and save the white part, and then they would make angel food cake. But she had one egg every day and a glass of red wine every day or something like that. Is that?
Yes. She had, for breakfast, she had an egg yolk that she beat with like a quarter cup of sugar and then poured coffee on top of. And then drank it. And then...
She didn't cook the egg?
No, just really hot coffee.
So you would just take the egg yolk, put a little bit of sugar in it, and then essentially just mix it with coffee.
Yeah.
A lot of sugar, not a little bit.
But still, that doesn't sound particularly appetizing, but huh.
Well, you know, it'd be like an egg cream kind of.
Yeah, okay, sure. Yeah, yeah.
And then...
I have found out that if an Italian is doing it every day, you should probably try it.
Well, I mean, obviously it worked because she made it to 103. Okay. So she would have an egg yolk every day, and then save the egg whites, and then apparently she would make angel food cake semi-frequently?
Mom would make angel food cake.
Just because you had the rest of the egg left over?
Right, yeah.
Huh. And then she drank wine frequently?
She drank a glass of wine every day until she was in her 90s.
Wow.
And she smoked one cigarette a day until she was in her 90s.
I mean, that's pretty typical Italian, right? Like the one glass of wine a day kind of thing, right?
Moderation was her mantra.
Yeah,
everything in moderation.
Well, hey, I guess, I mean, if that's what it takes to live to 103, good for her. Okay, I heard that rumor from my wife and I wanted cooperation, so.
Yeah, that was right.
Cool. So, one of the things I didn't ask you the first time, Julie, was can you talk about your career? So what different jobs did you have after college?
I worked at the Health Services Research Center in Portland. And from there, I went to the health planning agency in Portland. And then I left the healthcare field and sold real estate for
wow.
a while. Then when we moved to Bend, I quit selling real estate, and I really quit working full time, but I did become the chairman of the health council for the state of Oregon. So I did some stuff like that. And then
where do your kids come along in this career path?
Sarah was born while I was still at the planning agency. And actually then when Laura was born, I was working for the cancer program up at the medical school. And then I quit that right after Laura was born, sold real estate for 3 years in Portland. We moved to Bend, had Lizzie. So I pretty much did not work. But then I started doing some of the unpaid stuff with the health council. And then I when we were moving to Washington, I got the job with the Senate doing healthcare for the Senate Finance Committee.
Is that why you moved, or did you move?
No, actually we were both looking around for jobs. Al wanted a change. I wanted to work because the kids were getting close to college age. And so actually I did some consulting in Bend too, and I did some grant writing. But Al got a job in DC, and I knew a guy who used to work in DC, and I called him up and said, can you help me find a job there? And he gave my name to somebody who ended up giving my name to the chief of staff of the finance committee, Republicans. And he called me up and asked if I was interested. And so I went and interviewed. And
so you didn't have any...
before we moved, I had the job. So when we went to DC, we both had a job.
So you didn't have any experience in politics, but you had experience in the medical side of it.
Yeah, a little bit of my healthcare stuff was politics.
It was policy.
So it was politics. Yeah. And then the finance committee, I worked for Packwood, because he was the head Republican on the finance committee, and the chairman and the head Republican get to have all the staff for the committees. So Lloyd Benson was the chairman, and he had all the Democratic staff, and Bob Packwood was the ranking Republican, and he had all the Republican staff on the committee. And the committee deals with Medicare and Medicaid. So that's the healthcare angle with the finance committee.
So this is like, what year is this?
1991. And then Clinton was elected. And so instead of doing Medicare, I was hired to do Medicare. Then Clinton was elected, and healthcare reform, Hillary and everything came into being. And so we worked on that for a couple of years. Then Packwood ran for re-election, won, but then was accused of sexual harassment, so he resigned. So then I worked for Bill Roth.
So did you work directly for Packwood?
Well, he was my boss because he actually became chairman of the finance committee. Then when he resigned, Bill Roth of Delaware became chairman of the finance committee. So then he was my boss.
So I'm trying to remember, because it's been a long time. So yeah, what happened to Packwood? He was accused of sexual harassment or something like that, and then stepped down?
Yes.
I mean, that was pretty much, I mean, that seems so quaint by 2022 standards, right? Like,
yeah, pretty much.
Okay. I mean, I remember it being a big deal at the time. Like, oh my gosh, like this senator maybe did whatever, and then he stepped down. Like nowadays, like that would just like be a blip on the radar, right?
Well, you know, I don't know. He did end up stepping down. I mean, he did. I guess he had a reputation for womanizing, which I didn't even realize. And by the time I got there and was working for him, they had pretty much reined him in. They didn't let him go anyplace without a staffer accompanying him. And
Because of that, you think?
Yeah.
Because of his reputation?
Yeah.
He got drunk really easy.
And he drank, yeah.
So when he drank, then his inhibitions would go away. He was kind of a geeky guy, and he would behave inappropriately.
So when all that came out, did it surprise you? Or were you like, yeah, okay, I can see that?
A little bit it surprised me. I can remember the chief of staff calling me one Sunday morning and saying I think it was a Saturday. Actually, Mom and Dad were there visiting us. And she said, tomorrow on the front page of the Washington Post, there's going to be an article about Packwood. And then, you know, he got in a big pissing contest about not releasing his diaries because he documented everything. And anyway, so that went on for months. And finally, he resigned in September.
They wanted him to release his personal diaries?
Yeah. Well, he argued. He argued that they didn't have it. It was a privacy issue. And I think he lost, actually.
He did.
That seems like a weird thing to ask. Like, can you get your personal diary put this in the record? I guess if you're a senator, maybe I'll think.
A crime involved because of assault or something? I don't know.
It was partially that. Anyway, and it was partially because the personal diaries were his, also his record of doing business as a senator and as the head of the finance committee. So it was a government record. That he was keeping. So it wasn't like it was, you know, Dear Diary, I saw a unicorn last night. This was, I met with
this. Okay, so it was, okay, sure. So Packwood resigns. And
then Newt Gingrich gets elected to the Senate, to the House, as Speaker of the House. And all our policy work switched to balancing the budget. But Gingrich brought in, ushered in a new group of ultra conservatives. And so it became, there was really a conflict between Senate Republicans and House Republicans.
Interesting.
So, and things got ugly. I mean, I think the House Republicans hated the Senate Republicans more than they hated the Democrats.
So you obviously didn't lose your job. You just got a new boss and your focus switched.
Oh, I would have. I mean, I would have lost my job, but Roth came in and told all the committee staff that they would stay because we're the experts. You know, you can't just replace the whole staff of experts on the committee.
So I don't know, man. Today it seems like they do that all the time.
Well, he kept all the staff. And actually, we went into negotiations on the Balanced Budget Act like 2 weeks after he became chairman. And so he didn't know that much. He didn't care. He's the Roth of the Roth IRA. Are you familiar with the Roth IRA?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I didn't realize that was...
Well, he's the Roth of the Roth IRA, and tax was his big thing. And he didn't care that much about Medicare. So, and he didn't pay that much attention to it. So in all the negotiations, I had to sit at the table with him and do all the talking. So it was pretty interesting. So it was me on one side of the table arguing with Newt Gingrich on the other side of the table.
Wow.
Yeah, huh. It was interesting times. So we passed that. And anyway, I worked there, 3 more years? In 98, I left and went into a consulting firm that did health policy consulting and worked there until... I left there in 95.
No. Did you retire after that? Or?
I mean, 05.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, we moved back to Oregon and I did consulting from home, but you know, I left the firm. So.
Okay. This may seem like a foregone conclusion, but I'm curious. Did you have a good relationship with both of your parents?
Yeah.
You were close to both of them?
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know. I never met your dad. I'm not clear on what his relationship with you kids was. I know before George mentioned that he worked a lot. So there was a good chunk of time where he was on the road, but that was probably when you were real little, right?
Well, no, it was when in 62, when we moved to Oregon. So I was 12.
Oh, okay. So
15. So it was basically my high school years. It was 62 until 80. I think he retired in 87. So it was mostly everybody's school years. But he worked, yeah, he was only home on the weekends most of the time.
Okay, so in a lot of sense, Franca was a single mom during the week because he was just straight up gone.
Yeah, and I think John talked about that, and he said
yeah,
it was the best time of mom's life because she sort of had a purpose and took over running the house and took care of the banking and the grocery. I mean, she did everything. And I guess dad would get some groceries on the weekend. But
does that make your relationship with your dad more complicated just because he's not home?
No, no.
It was just the way it was.
Yeah, just the way it was.
She ran the house that he was still the father. And there were some, when your father gets home, issues, I think. But
yeah.
She basically, I was there when Art retired, and you could see it hit Franca really hard. And it wasn't like anybody was being mean about it or anything, but it was, you know, he was home, and he was used to running his own show, too. And so they were very much old school. He was the man. He was the head of the household. But to be fair, she'd been running that household and doing a damn good job of it. So
I'm sure that's a shock, right? Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, there wasn't fighting or anything. I mean, I didn't see any of that, but it was a strain on her. And I mean, it wasn't like she shouldn't have been strained. And it wasn't like he did anything untoward to cause it, but it was just the way it worked out.
My friend's father-in-law was an oil rig worker, and so he would be gone for 2 or 3 months at a time. They'd be out on the rig, and then he'd come home for a, you know, a couple of weeks. And he'd go back. You know, he did this for like 30 years. And my friend was telling me, he was like, yeah, he retired this year. And so now he's home all the time. It's the same thing like you were saying. He looked at me. He's like, I give them like a 50-50 shot of them getting a divorce or not, because they're just not used to being around each other because he's been gone so long. Right. You know, so I'm sure it's got to be a shell shock. Like, you come home and you expect things to be one way, and all of a sudden, yeah, your whole world flips upside down. I could absolutely see that. So, so one thing that came up, Franken named all her kids, I would say pretty common names, except for Meryl. I've never heard Meryl before. Do you know where that name came from?
Yeah, Mom said they just wanted something a little different, and it was a form of Mary in the name book that they were looking at. So they just decided on Meryl.
Oh.
Meryl always hated her name. Always.
Oh, really?
Yeah, she might feel better now that there's a Meryl Streep, but...
Oh, I didn't think about that. I was going to say, I don't know if I know anybody else named Meryl, but you're right, Meryl Streep. Okay.
Yeah, and she always hated it.
I mean, it's definitely less common than Julie or George or Mark, right? I mean, those are all pretty... Okay, it makes sense now that you explain it. Do you remember, because you were the first person I think I interviewed, Julie, so I don't think I had a chance to ask you this. It came out afterwards. Do you remember picking on Meryl as a kid? The story I heard was that you and George used to pick on Meryl.
Yeah, we picked on Meryl a little bit. A little bit. George teased her a lot. She was just different.
I thought George's explanation of it was very fair. Meryl ended up being the butt of jokes or that sort of thing. And she also ended up crying and stomping off upstairs a lot, but she set herself up for it.
Yeah.
Well, okay. And interestingly, in her interview, she said she didn't feel picked on. So that was
good. Yeah, I thought that was really interesting because a couple people asked me, like, you should ask Meryl about this because George and Julie used to pick on her just mercilessly. And I was like, and when I asked, yeah, like you said, she was like, yeah, I mean, they picked on me, but it was no big deal. It's just, I mean, that's just what it is, right?
Yeah.
So, okay. I'm just wondering if you remember, because like the stories I heard was that you and George would set out to try and make Meryl cry just to drive, just because that's the way Meryl was.
No, it wasn't that hard.
It was pitifully easy.
Okay.
I mean, this is after I arrived there, but.
Mostly it was like if we were playing a game or something, she'd get frustrated and start crying. It wasn't that hard. But no, we didn't pick on her a lot.
Well, I mean, Meryl didn't think so, so it's fine. Which one of your siblings were you closest to growing up, Julie?
Probably George. It was more like three sets of two.
Yeah.
I would say.
That makes sense. Just because, you're talking about just because of the age separation? Yeah, sure. Okay. The last question that came up was, Laura told me that she was, I'm trying to remember, she went to the Peace Corps and then she went to college and she moved home after going back to college when she was 25 or 26,
she
something.
Went to college and then she went to the Peace Corps and then she moved home.
Okay, so I had it backwards. Okay, so the story that Laura told me was that she moved home when she was whatever, 25-ish. And she lived with you guys again for however, it's 6 months, 9 months, a year, something like that. And then that you guys asked her to move out. Is that true?
We encouraged her because she was awful. We had our second home out in the Shenandoah Valley, and we'd go out there for the weekends and just be home for the work week. So we were out there 3 nights a week. But, you know, the house would be an absolute total disaster when we came home. Her room was always a disaster. We expected her to tell us where she was because, you know, she isn't home at 3 o'clock in the morning. We wanted to know, and she resented that. So there was tension.
She was keeping typical hours of a 25-year-old woman.
Sure.
If she wanted to get home at 5:30 or 6 o'clock in the morning, she did. But if we wake up at night at 4 o'clock and someone who's living with you is not there, you know, has she been hit by a bus? Has she been abducted? You just...
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, you're a good parent, right? I mean, that's part of... Absolutely. That makes total sense to me.
We tried to explain to Laura that you can't just quit being a parent. We're going to worry. We can't turn that off. And all we were asking for was a phone call. We never remotely said, you can't do this. Who are you seeing? What are you doing? We said, just, you know, if you're going to be gone really late, just give us a phone call and say, hey, I'm going to be really late. We won't say, where are you? What are you doing? Have you been drinking? Blah, blah.
Right.
We're not going to do any of that shit. We just kind of like to know if you're going to be late. She really resented it.
I don't remember asking her to leave, but I remember encouraging her to get on with her life.
Sure.
And that living home with her parents was not a good thing.
Oh, well, I would have to say I remember asking her.
Do you?
Yeah.
She says that you guys essentially kicked her out.
It was just completely blowing our life up, and she either needed to have some respect for us or go live someplace else.
But then where did she go live?
I don't remember.
I don't either.
For what it's worth, she said you guys kicked her out and that she deserved it. So I thought it was funny.
That's pretty accurate.
Yeah.
I think
it's funny because
we're kicking her out, but she did deserve it.
It's funny because literally everything you're saying, like as a parent, like I get all of it, right? And I've literally had those exact same conversations with my 16-year-old like yesterday, you know. So like, yeah,
that's right.
I guess
you don't quit having them.
It's timeless.
We totally understood. She had been on her own hook. She went to college, then she went to the Peace Corps, and that's what her comeback would always be. Well, you didn't know where I was in the Peace Corps. I hiked to Haiti and hung out with a bunch of Haitians, and you didn't know what I was doing. And we said, yeah, but now you're home, and you're waking us up when you come home, or you're not waking us up because you haven't come home, and we can't help worrying about it. We just can't help it. So just out of respect for us, how about a phone call?
Yeah, absolutely.
We finally had a kind of come to a
understanding
meeting where I just said, Laura, this has got to stop.
Yeah.
You refuse to do it, and we can't flip a switch and say, okay, we won't worry, so you're driving us crazy here.
There was one time when I was 18 or 19 and still living at home, and my dad sat me down, and I got the conversation of, this is not a hotel, that if you're going to live here and eat our food and, you know, use our electricity, there's a bare minimum of things that you have to contribute to the house. And I went, oh, okay, I get it. So I actually told Gabe the other day, I'm like, Gabriel, this is not a hotel. You got to clean up your own stuff. I know you're tired from working. I know you got all these things to do, but anyway, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just parent stuff. You're absolutely right.
Pretty typical.
Yeah. It sounds like I'm sure parents have been complaining about that exact same thing for hundreds of years, I'm sure. All right, Julie, those are all the follow-up questions I have.
Okay.
If you've got, you know, a hot date somewhere else, that's great. But I do have a couple questions for Al.
Yeah.
Have time, Al.
I'll let Al lie.
Okay.
But I will listen to them later.
Have you been listening, Julie? Have you learned anything?
I have listened to not all of them. But today, Sarah asked me about the mom's miscarriage and the baby that died.
Yeah.
I think George had the timing of that wrong.
Yeah.
I think the miscarriage was after I was born, and the baby that died was before I was, between George and I.
Well, I was trying to figure, I was doing the math in my head because there's 2.5 years between you and George, right?
Yeah.
So if she had both a miscarriage and a stillbirth, like that's back to back to back kids.
Yeah, right. No,
but,
it wasn't a stillbirth. It was, the baby was born and
lived
for 4 or 5 hours. And mom always said at the time that it was the same lung issue that John F. Kennedy's son had that died. Right?
Do you know, I guess that's another question I forgot to ask George. John said that the baby, they took the baby away and it was never buried, or you guys don't know where it is. Like it's not in a graveyard somewhere?
They had him buried in a cemetery in a plot that was you had it for so many years, and then somebody else got buried in that plot. So
who, like the hospital, did, or your parents did?
My parents bought this plot. I mean, I'm sure money was an issue, but they bought this plot where the baby's body would be for like, I don't know, 20 years. And then after 20 years, they somebody else. Oh, I see. There. So it was in Chicago someplace in a cemetery, but it's not there anymore.
Yeah, John said that he doesn't know, or that you guys didn't. So it's not like you go visit him or whatever, because he just right. is. Right. Okay. All right.
Yeah. Yeah, he just lived for 4 hours. So.
Yeah, that's got to be pretty brutal. And wow.
Yeah. And then mother had the diagnosis of that they told her was cancer and that she was going to die. So they had a very bad couple months. I don't know how long it lasted, but I know she said she used to come home and dad would go over to the neighbors and cry before he came home to see her because he was so upset. And then it turned out that it was some sort of cervical something that is very common after you have a baby. So pathology was just, you know, I mean, things weren't that sophisticated. This is back in 1950. So,
right.
Anyway, so that's the only thing. George had the timing on the stillbirth. I mean, on the miscarriage wrong.
Okay. Well, thanks for setting the record straight.